The Book of Wealth. Here's the quote. Our most valuable possessions are those which can be shared without lessening, those which, when shared, multiply. Our least valuable possessions are those which, when divided, are diminished. Quote by William H. Danforth. Here's the summary. The laws of wealth are simple. There are but two. First, find a need and fill it. And second, give what you would desire. The application of these two laws is all that stands between you and wealth. Riches, materially and spiritually, await those who hear the message of this book and their inner ear. Do you desire wealth? Be honest with yourself. Would you like to have enough money to do what you want to do? I did and do desire wealth. Every thinking person alive desires wealth, including those who already have it. There are many people who would try to deny this fact. Only the crooked or genius, they say, can gain wealth. The poor are more spiritual, others claim. We have no desire for material goods, hence we don't need wealth, cry many of our young people. These statements are not truths. They are, rather, justifications for the lack of progress and control in people's lives. I have observed that those who so violently condemn wealth are precisely those who do not have it and see no way of personally gaining it. They take the fear of failure and translate it into love of poverty. If I say that I do not want wealth, then I do not have to deal with reality. I don't have to face that awful truth that perhaps I must change. Perhaps there is something about me that is not perfect. When I have no goals, how can I possibly fail? The truth is, when I have no goals, how can I possibly succeed? If I do not admit a desire for wealth, for sure I will never obtain wealth. Poverty is no disgrace to a man, but it is confoundly inconvenient. By Sidney Smith. There is absolutely nothing wrong with being wealthy or desiring wealth. In fact, it's natural. It's natural to have the things you want and need and know that they will be there tomorrow. It's natural to have liberty. Wealth is a tool to help achieve that liberty. Wealth in all forms, money, gold, jewels, stocks, bonds, property, contracts, royalties, is only a commodity for exchange. It is what we give to get what we want. The value lies in its exchangeability, not in the material substance. Gold does not make a tasty dish, nor does diamonds provide much shelter over your head. It's only in exchange for food or housing that this wealth has meaning for you. As a child, I was told, money is the root of all evil. As an adult, I understand the meaning of this statement. When we love money in and of itself, collect it just to collect it, hang on to it and hoard it, this is evil. That is, destructive to self. It is the love of money that is the root of all evil. Money thought of and used as a means of exchange is neither good nor bad. It is merely a tool. And as with any tool, the use to which it is put determines the goodness or badness. Wealth is meant to be used. What we do not use, we lose. This is the law of use. Does not the parable of the talents and the three servants say this? The first two servants took the talents given by the master and put them to use. But the third servant buried his in the ground. A year later, the master returned. The first two servants were allowed to keep their talents, which by this time had multiplied many-fold. But all was taken from the third servant who had let his talents lie idle, and he was placed in bondage. Allow your wealth to lie idle, and you will feel the weight of the claims that bind your liberty. The laws of wealth are very simple. There are only two laws about material wealth. One is about the creation of wealth, and the other is about how to become a receiver of wealth. You can become very, very wealthy through the use of these two laws. Begin by understanding the laws, then translate and apply them to your specific business or life situation. The results will be awesome. But don't take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Experience what happens. Experiencing is what life is all about. We gain a little understanding, wisdom, or skill, and then we try it out. We experience this new insight in our life and see what happens. This is all that I ask you to do. Not to intellectualize, not to analyze, and certainly not to justify. Experiment and experience. Then, use the results you get in your own life, not my results, nor your neighbor's, to decide if these laws are to become a permanent part of your living pattern. What have you got to lose? just your feelings of limitation. The creation of wealth, i.e. money, is very easily done. All you have to do is to find a need and fill it. Find a need and fill it. The greater the need, the more people will pay. So if you're having problems in your business and your income is not as high as you would like, look at the needs of the people with whom you do business. Perhaps they do not need your product or service. Find a greater need and fill that need. Your income will increase automatically because the greater the need, the more people will pay for it. The rule applies in a far broader spectrum than just making money and obtaining material wealth. It applies to the areas of winning friends and gaining promotions. In the larger sense, it translates this way. People have everything you will ever want, and they will gladly give it to you, provided you help them get what they want. Find a need and fill it. Be of service. Now, you may think that the foregone statement is the law. It is not. It is merely an application of the basic law, which is even more expansive. The law to which I refer applies to all of living, all of experiencing. In reality, wealth is life. Your wealth is the sum total of all you have and all you experience. Material wealth refers to all the earthly goods you have. The laws of material wealth are the basic laws of life applied in the direction of material things. So the foregone statement is a translation of a basic law as it applies to daily living. The basic law to which I refer and from which the foregone statement comes from is this. Man is paid in direct proportion to the service he renders mankind. The greater the service, the more he is paid. And rightly so. Now, turn the statement around. A man's service to mankind is in direct proportion to his pay. If you want to gauge your service, look at your income and experiences. Money, which is material wealth, is a measuring stick for service. Wealth is the result of rendering service. I don't work for wealth. Working for wealth is the love of money. If all you get at the end of the week is what is inside your paycheck, then you are highly cheated by yourself. You are cheating yourself, destroying yourself. So if you desire to increase your wealth, materially or otherwise, increase your service to mankind. And if you desire to and do increase your service, you will increase your wealth. A wise man does not give service for free. He will always charge the fair price. He realizes that nothing is free. There ain't a free lunch. The service will be paid for either monetarily or otherwise. Giving money is the easiest form of payment. The non-monetary payments include loss of self-respect, hurt feelings, and loss of opportunity. These payments are the expensive ones. The psi classes are not and never will be given for free. How many people would accept the psi concept and believe in it if it were for free? Very, very few. They would not know how to attach the value to psi. So in ignorance, they would assume it was worth nothing. They would lose the opportunity to create liberty, peace, and love in their lives. The price is paid one way or another. Only a handful of people listened to Jesus during his lifetime. The masses turned to Christianity when the price was persecution. So whatever it is that you do, making pottery, running a garden business, teaching, running a service station, sewing, engineering, counseling, feel confident in charging a fair price. A fair price is one which is equal to the service rendered. Competition has nothing to do with a fair price. To increase your wealth, increase your service. All you have to do is apply this simple law to your business or profession. Let me illustrate how with an example from the everyday competitive world in which we live. Let us consider an intersection, one of those busy ones where two main streets cross, and imagine that there are four filling stations, one in each corner. Would you say there is a competition at that intersection? I certainly would not. There is no such thing as competition, except for those people who choose to place themselves in competition. If you see the situation as competitive, then you will indeed be in competition with the other filling stations. You are setting yourself up to lose. Competition is a win-lose situation. Either I win and the rest of you lose, or I lose and one of you wins. It happens every day. Filling station number one lowers its price to try to get ahead of the competition. Stations two and four follow suit, while station three goes even a cent lower. Stations 2 and 4 are now hurting, so the next day they lower their price 2 cents, and so it goes. To maintain themselves, the stations must cut service and cut wages. It's a rat race, everybody worrying, everybody having ulcers, everybody having problems making ends meet. When you drive your car in, typically you have to wait. The owner feels pressured, placing himself and his feelings first. He does not check the oil, the battery, water or tires, nor wash the windshield. By trying to be competitive, these stations would price themselves right out of business. Not even the customer would win, because if they all fail, then he has to find somewhere else to get gas. Or if only one gas station remains, then he might have to pay an exorbitant price. There are not very many winners in a competitive situation. Now let's suppose that station number 2 gets tired of that rat race. He decides to come to a Psi class and finds out there is another way. I win, you win. He no longer is interested in being in competition with the others. He sets a fair price on his gas. Quite often, it will be 2 or 3 cents per gallon higher than the surrounding places. It is a fair price because he gives you the very best service in town, and he pays the highest wages to his attendants. When you drive into his service station, you most certainly will not have to wait. He doesn't have one attendant, but he has 2 or 3. You get immediate service. While one attendant is filling the tank, the other is up front cleaning your windows and checking under the hood, the battery, fan belt, air filter, as well as the oil. They even look at the tires. All this without being asked. Why does the station do all this? To sell you a new fan belt or air filter? No, their object is to provide you with the best service possible, to make sure you get where you're going without problems, to catch any problems before they become big. This station sincerely gives you the best service available. Now, when you do have a problem, where do you think you will go? When the tires need rotating, or when the carburetor needs tuning up, or the battery needs replacing, which station will get your business? I know which one will get mine. The foregone illustration is not hypothetical. It's real. When my wife and I moved to Milwaukee, I looked for just such a station. It took me a whole month before I finally found one. I checked over the entire operation. Everything was spotless, even the lube room. Cars were backed up waiting to be worked on. There were no special deals at that station, no bargain rates. Gas was 2 cents higher than the station across the street. This is the man that I want, I thought. I walked in and said to the manager, I have a special problem. I travel 3 or 4 weeks out of the month. I have a wife and children, and they need a car that is dependable, that starts even in a blizzard, and that does not break down on the road. The car will need maintenance, and I need you to decide what is to be done. Don't call my wife because she doesn't know. She will bring in the car whenever you say. You decide when it comes in and what is to be done. He kept records on the car, called it in, worked on it. All I ever got from him were bills, which I was happy to pay. The car ran beautifully, never stalled, started every time, and never broke down. The man had integrity. He ran his business to serve. I wanted him to be paid well because I appreciated the service that he gave. I appreciated his concern, especially in the winter weather. A man is paid in direct proportion to the service he renders mankind. Now apply this to your business, whatever it may be. Did the above station owner care about the competition? No, he was too busy to worry about the competition. All he cared about was what was right, what was fair, and having a relationship that was a win-win with his customers. By doing so, he has integrity with himself. He makes money, and he is happy with himself. Create that attitude in your business, and you will not have to look for customers. They will come to you. There are many services you can give and may enjoy doing, but the price that people will pay is in proportion to the need. So the need is where you must go to analyze the service. Based on the need, a fair price is placed on the service. Not a cheap price, nor one to make a killing, but a fair price. To increase your income, increase your service, fill a greater need. All right, you say. I understand that, but I don't own my own company. I don't have customers. Or, I work for a company and I'm only one small part of what we do. I don't set policies. I have to follow them. Or, how am I supposed to increase service? The service an employee renders is to his employer. So increase your service to your employer. In other words, cultivate the habit of doing more than you are paid for, and do it cheerfully with the purpose of service. What if every night you started studying your profession so you'd know more? What if you volunteered for those tasks which others shirk, either because they are hard or because there is no pay for doing them? What would happen if you were the most knowledgeable, the most skilled and up-to-date person in your field. Then, what if you started going to work 10 or 15 minutes early each day to get yourself organized? Instead of entering right on the dot, sitting around with a cup of coffee and taking an half hour or an hour to wake up, you're ready and working 5 minutes before check-in time. What if you stopped clock watching and forgot about coffee breaks because you were totally into a project, producing results for your company? What if you brown bagged a couple of lunches each week and worked right through the lunch hour instead of taking those extended coffee breaks and lunch hours? What if you stayed an extra 15 minutes at the end of the day to wrap things up and get organized for tomorrow? What if you were always positive with the other employees instead of buying their negativity? When you walk into the office feeling great and someone growls, do you go on a downer? That is only because you are weak. You bought their program. You bought their negativity. So what if you stopped buying negativity and started selling positivity? I can guarantee you one of two things will happen. Either you will get promoted to the top because you have displayed leadership abilities, or you will get fired. You could be fired because you will have rattled the troops. You will be so unusual that you will stick out like a sore thumb. It's not normal to be excited about your job. It's not normal to be excited about your employer making a profit. However, these feelings are natural when you understand the laws of wealth, when you know that your reward is in direct proportion to the service you render. This is the start on the road to wealth. In all my years of work, I've had a few people come to me and say, "Mr. Wilhite, I see that you have such and such a problem. This is what I can do to solve it for you." Most people come to me and say, "I want to work for you. How much do I get paid, and what are the fringe benefits? Tell me what to do." I don't need this latter type of employee. They're the takers. They're the ones who will worry about who gets what assignment instead of getting the job done. They'll worry more about whether the girl at the next desk is getting paid more than they are and doing less work than about whether the company is going to make a profit this year. Such people don't last very long in my business, and they certainly don't move up in the company. On the road to wealth and success, there is one very large stumbling block. It's a regular mountain that stands between people and their ability to actually go ahead and give service to their employer or customers. The mountain I refer to is this: the feeling that you are being cheated if you do not immediately receive money or material wealth for all the services you render. Most people say, "I'll try this for a day or two, or a week or two, or maybe even a month or two, and see what happens." And guess what? Often nothing happens that they can see. They don't instantly get that raise, that $1,000 raise, or the volume of business is not doubled overnight. "Well, I guess this doesn't work for me," they say, and they give up. They have run smack into that mountain. How long have you been running the programs of competition and of only doing that for which you are paid? How long have you been thinking of wealth as just your paycheck? I don't mean to imply that it cannot happen instantly. It can, and it may not. Similarly, your payment may come in your paycheck, or it may come some other way, like a new job offer, a promotion, a company car, fringe benefits. Find a need and fill it. Serve. The law is universal. You will be paid directly in proportion to the service you render to mankind. To know that you know this law, you must experience it. I suggest the following experiment. Each day for the next 2 months, which is 60 days total, render a service to at least one person for which you neither expect nor accept money. Give this service only for the benefit of serving, and do it willingly. It doesn't matter what the service is nor from whom it is performed. The results will be awesome. So far, I have only mentioned creating wealth. There is another way to obtain wealth, and that is through receiving wealth. This is a way taught and practiced in all major religions of which I have knowledge. This is known as tithes. Historically, the word meant one-tenth. The modern-day term, which I prefer to use, is seed money. Seed money refers to setting aside 10%, which is a tithe, or more of your income, and using this money to spread the knowledge of truth in some form or another. Generally, this is done by supporting an institution such as a church or Psy World or other nonprofit organizations engaged in such work. If you think about the meaning of seed money, then you'll know where it must be given. The purpose is to acknowledge the true source of supply. Hence, it must be given to such ends. Giving to your family, friends, or neighbors, though these are good acts, does not count as seed money. giving to scientific research or community projects comes closer. Anyone with a high awareness knows that what the world needs is spiritual understanding and knowledge. That is all the world needs. When every person has awareness of such knowledge and uses it creatively, then the political and social problems which we now experience will resolve themselves automatically. Many of our current government programs will be totally unneeded. Understanding the basis for seed money makes you a trustee for mankind. Under your control is what you call your wealth. Use that gift wisely for the benefit of all mankind, and even more will come under your control for the use of all mankind. The end towards which seed money is directed is the spreading of truth. With all your awareness and knowledge, select that organization or activity which best achieves this goal. That is where to give your seed money. I further suggest you give it anonymously, for in doing so, you truly are giving to give. The applause for your gifts, especially if they are large ones, robs you of the value of seed money. Applause distracts from the purpose. Several years down the line, you suddenly discover that you're giving to get applause, and then you have lost the true value for giving. For this reason, in PsyWorld, we simply acknowledge gifts. In PsyWorld, you will not find lists being sent across the country of who donated and how much. Your gift, seed money, is a personal matter and should remain as such. There is absolutely no obligation for anyone to give seed money until he reaches that state of consciousness where he wants to do so. As you go along the path of awareness, there will come a time when you want to do so. It will seem natural. If you give out of a sense of duty or fear or superstition, then only more fear will come to you. It's better not to give than to give with the wrong attitude. Frequently I hear, "I really want to give and I will just as soon as things look up or as soon as the kids get older." If you find yourself using such excuses, you've missed the whole point. The greater the present need, the greater the need for giving seed money, and the greater the need to acknowledge the true source of supply. Difficulties are an indication of an incorrect mental attitude. They will disappear only when the mental attitude changes. Seed money, given with spiritual understanding, indicates such a change. How much to give? Well, traditionally, according to Hebrew law, it is 10%. The Levitical law required the Hebrews to render unto the service of God 1/10 portion of all the produce of the earth and herds. Throughout the Old Testament, continual reference is made to the need and benefits of tithing. For example, "Will a man rob God, yet ye have robbed me? But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. Ye are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into this storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house. And prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven, and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it." Malachi 3:8-10. Further references are found in Proverbs 3:9-10 and Leviticus 27:30. If you're concerned about whether to give 10% of your gross pay or 10% of your take-home pay or even 10% of what is left over after expenses, then I suggest that perhaps you're not ready to give anything. The answer to 10% of what is found in the previous quotation. And if you read the verse in Proverbs carefully, then you'll find the answer to the question, when should I give? The means of creating wealth was founded upon the basic law. Man is paid in direct proportion to the service he renders mankind. The means of receiving wealth through the practice of giving seed money is also founded upon a basic law. Man receives back that which he gives. As you sow, so shall you reap. Like attracts like. What you are to the universe, that will the universe be to you. No man or woman escapes these two laws. You will either rise and prosper through them, or you will be in bondage under them. If a person has $1,000,000 which is locked in a vault and never touched, is he wealthy? If you fear losing your wealth when you give substantial material gifts, are you free? In both cases, I say you're in bondage to your wealth. Only through giving can you demonstrate strength. Giving is an acknowledgement that whence this came, there is more. In fact, there is an infinite supply. If I give all away, I can and will create more. I do not suggest that you instantly go out and give everything you own away. That would be foolish. First, demonstrate your understanding of the laws of creating and receiving wealth. You'll know when you truly understand by the results in your life, specifically by the amount of wealth you control. Tithing, sharing, and giving are all ways of expressing gratitude. Think about it. To express gratitude through words alone is hollow. Action is needed. How do you say thank you for sunshine or health, for clear days or gentle rains, for happiness, joy, or love? You say it by sharing what you have. You say it by making the world a better place in which to live. You say it by recognizing the true source of all supply. The world is not yours. It's not mine. It is ours. Gratitude is the awareness and thankfulness for all things received. A key skill in developing wealth and wealth consciousness is money handling. This is not difficult. It just requires a system. The following system is one used by many of the leaders I know. It kind of goes like this. 10% of all monies received are given to a humanitarian organization for the betterment of mankind. It's what we call seed money. 10% of what is received goes into a savings account or is invested to increase total net worth. 25% of what is received goes to pay off debts or loans. Taxes are taken out of the remainder. What is left is for use on food, entertainment, clothes, etc. The first area, seed money, has already been discussed. The second 10% represents what you pay yourself. After working all week, the least you deserve is 10%. The money goes into a savings account and you don't touch it. If you want to invest your savings, go to a money specialist. When you have car trouble, you go to an auto mechanic. When you don't feel well, you go to a doctor. So when you want to invest your savings, see a money specialist, someone who, by results in his own life, can demonstrate he knows how to make money grow and has integrity. The next 25%, and that is a quarter, goes toward the payment of car loans, house payments, and any other notes or debts which you might have. If your current payments on debts exceed 25% of your income, you have a problem, one which you seriously need to think about solving. If you are currently paying less than 25% to clear debts, then you might wish to increase your savings or seed money or just enjoy it. Out of the remaining 55%, next comes taxes, federal, state, local, and any other ones you might owe. Finally, what is left is for normal living expenses and for freedom money. That is, money for you to do what you want to do. Follow this simple plan, and you'll find that you're building wealth every single month. One reaction I always get from those who have low salaries or that are on a tight budget is a cry of protest. $350 is supposed to pay rent, food, and give me some freedom money. You must be kidding. Most renters, however, don't have large debt payments, perhaps a car, but usually not a house payment. Combining these two categories would give a total of $600 for debts, living expenses, and freedom money. However, I'd like to point out to renters that, in reality, they are paying off someone else's debt. Those of you who are currently renting might find it wise to consult a money specialist about the other options available to you: home ownership, condominiums, lease options, investment property. Not only do these options often provide large tax savings, they also keep your money working for you. Where is your money going? Well, write down all the expenses you had last month with these categories: seed money, savings, debts, taxes, and living expenses. How does the way you actually spend money compare with the plan used by myself and by many other leaders? Is there a lot of money for which you cannot account for, which just got spent somehow? Do you give one category preference over all others? Saving money is simply a matter of habit. Once established in your life pattern, it'll become so automatic that you'll scarcely be aware of it. People who are always short of funds have a habit of spending money. Have you ever noticed that no matter how much money they earn, there's never enough? And usually these people can't even explain how the money was spent. Money just seems to disappear for them. They have a poverty consciousness, which will keep them in a poorhouse until such a time that their thinking changes. The savings habit is just the reverse. People with this habit are always able to save something, no matter how little they may earn. And what is more important, the savings habit creates in your consciousness the awareness that you are never poor and that your income is constantly rising. Few people realize the rate at which systematic savings build. A mere $1.66 a day, which is $50 a month, builds to $2,000 by the end of just 3 years, and to $10,000 at the end of 10 years. Startling when you consider how easy it is to spend $50 a month on useless merchandise. If you fix in your mind the idea that your earning ability is limited, then indeed it is. You will never earn more than that self-set limit. The subconscious will create and maintain the limits you set. With the savings habit, income is constantly increasing due to the return on the money saved. Net worth, likewise, is on an uphill path. Thus, the message to the subconscious is, I am more prosperous. I have more wealth. Gradually, self-confidence, enthusiasm, and the feeling of wealth replace any negative attitudes and thoughts. This new attitude I call prosperity consciousness. Soon you'll begin to expect and demand new and higher levels of prosperity for yourself. You will expect to earn more, and you will. You will expect to have more, and you do. Prosperity consciousness does not come with a set level of income, but rather is the result of an attitude about the availability of wealth for you. Saving money, creating wealth, and giving seed money all deal with wealth in a material sense. In reality, however, wealth is in the mind. True wealth is knowledge. What you know, what you can do, and what you can create are the real wealth in your life. This is the basis from which all your material wealth springs. An old proverb says, give a man a fish, and you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, and you feed him for a lifetime. So it is with wealth. Give a person money, and you give him the gift of dependency. Give a person the knowledge of how to gain wealth, and you give him the gift of independence and liberty. What greater gift could there be? Here's a quote. You give but little when you give of your possessions. It is when you give of yourself that you truly give. For what are your possessions but things you keep and guard for fear you may need them tomorrow? Quote by Gibran in The Prophet.
This is the end of this disc. The program continues on the next disc.